The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Okay, and welcome back once again. I must say, starting out, that I've been in this business for quite a while, and I have never seen a more obvious, blatant blackout of national news in this country. The mainstream media has literally rolled over and shut up. And I'll tell you why. If you remember just a few days ago, Not many days ago at all, the media was saturated with story after story about Joe Biden giving Ukraine the green light to use American ATACMS hypersonic missiles on Russia, on the nation of Russia. That's like war. And let me just quickly add as a sideline, those missiles are not fired without American complete control and participation. It's not the Ukrainians are not firing these missiles. Well, many of you, unless you've been paying attention, if you don't watch the mainstream media, you probably know. But about 8 or 9 hours ago, Ukraine fired 6 ATACMS hypersonic rockets at Russia. And I want to tell you, I'm amazed at what I see. I've looked at the mainstream media. I first went to look to see what CNN had, MSNBC, and I wanted to see how they were covering this. It's a huge story. Well, guess what? There was nothing there. Nothing. Zero. Fox News, to this, well, about 10 minutes ago, had nothing. This should have been top banner headline story. Pictures of ATACMS, missiles, whatever. Nothing on Fox. Zero. Maybe if you went way down the page, I looked through 4 screens of news. 4 full screens. Scroll down, nothing. MSNBC, nothing. CBS, nothing. NBC News, nothing. CNBC, nothing. This didn't just happen. It was ordered. Don't cover the story. I finally on CNN found a very small headline, 2 screens down. It was an international story, and it was something like Russia shoots down 5 of 6 incoming ATACMS missiles. That's it. Nothing about Russia's threats, nothing about Russia's nuclear doctrine and its revised nuclear doctrine at that. What is really funny is David Oates called me from Australia today, and he said, well, you know, what do you think? And I said, what do I think about what? He said, the missiles. I said, what missiles? Because it was nowhere to be seen. It first popped up a little bit in social media. I believe Reddit had some stories on it. I think it's out there now, but it is still not on the mainstream media here. And after all the attention that was given to the Biden green light, if you can't figure, I know you people can, but if the average American can't figure out that there's something wrong here, they don't want to figure it out. This is like we're on the verge of World War III, thermonuclear war, as possible. And what Vladimir Putin said, quote, "We will use nuclear weapons if a mass enemy missile or UAV is launched toward Russian territory or when these weapons cross into Russian territory. We will use nuclear weapons." That's what he said. How many red lines have we stomped on, mocked, shredded, and laughed at that Russia has laid down? This is the big one. The word is that the decision was made that if there is a launch of hypersonic missiles into Russian territory, there will be a nuclear response. What that means, your guess is as good as mine. But that's what Putin said. He's usually a man of his word, in fact, more so than any other international diplomat I can think of. Sergei Lavrov today, he's there, call him like Secretary of Defense, Secretary of State, kind of rolled into one. He said, Ukraine, you see, the Russians know, Ukraine could not have fired ATACMS missiles without direct U.S. participation. Absolutely. Ukrainians don't know how to handle and target these things. We give them all that information. Our crews are right there. Believe it. So, again, the Russians know. I just don't know if they're going to finally do something. I have a story from Hal Turner. Russia is deploying portable nuclear shelters for its citizens. True? I don't know. So I'm watching this very carefully, but I tell you again, Fox, CNN, MSNBC, CBS, NBC, CNBC, nothing. Nothing. It's called cover-up. I wonder if this kind of goes hand-in-hand with the same policy that if there was a discovery that an incoming asteroid was going to smack the middle of America, you know, the size of a skyscraper, if the people would even be told about it. I don't think they would. It's kind of the same thing. Think about it like this, too. If Pearl Harbor occurred 8 hours ago, likely to trigger World War II, would the media have covered that? I think so. We didn't have that here. So, again, we've crossed and stomped upon another Vladimir Putin, Sergei Lavrov, Russian red line. So, you know, I hope you've got some food put away. You never know. All right, with that, I'll stop rambling here. I apologize for taking my guest's time. Frank Joseph is back tonight. We're going to do another That Was the Week That Was and look back at this week in history and see what happened. Hello, Frank. Welcome.
Hello. And there's no need to apologize. Whatever you have to say is far more important than I can bring up now. This is the lead story of the world, but not in America, apparently. Most Americans.
One quick thing.
Yeah,
I forgot.
Go ahead.
David Oates said, "Here's what I'm watching." And he sent me a link to one of the primary India national news services. All of the Indian national news services are 24/7 now, full-time on this. It was marvelous coverage, full-time. They weren't just doing a piece here or there. It was full-time, dedicated. Same thing in Australia, but not here. So anyway, please go ahead with what you were saying.
Well, there was a film that was made in 1941. It's a classic film. Some people consider it the greatest film ever made. And the thing about art, whether it's a film or a novel, is that the people involved develop so much passion for it, sometimes they become actually prophetic, and they have a prescience for future developments. And the film that I'm referring to is Citizen Kane by Orson Welles, which I'm sure all of our listeners have seen.
Oh, yeah.
And in Citizen Kane, this is the story of a mega journalist, a yellow journalist, turn of the century, Victorian age guy, who had total power over the news media. And someone once accused him of not reporting things. And he says, I always report things. And, I mean, I'm paraphrasing here. I don't remember the exact line from the script. But it was to the effect that if you want something to be important, you put it on the front page. If you want something to be unimportant or of lesser importance, you put it on the back page, or you bury it inside the newspaper. This is in that film. I don't, like I said, I don't know the exact quote. And I think that is a principle that is being applied by our news media. The only good thing to come out of all this is that, and here I'm just referring very briefly back to the last election, which I'm sure your listeners are sick to death hearing about, but just this one thing. The greatest thing that has come out of it, at least so far, the greatest thing was the complete discredit of the U.S. media, news media. Here you had the entire national media virtually in lockstep against this man who ran for president. They called him a Hitlerite, a fascist. The lies heaped upon this man's head were unbelievable. And guess what, folks? It didn't work. And the vast majority of the American people, rightly or wrongly, whether you approve of this or not, in this regard, they were completely not taken in by the news media. And that's one of the things about what this vote means, this mandate, and he does definitely, Trump definitely has a mandate. The part of that mandate is that the vast majority of the American people reject the news media. It's a complete utter rejection. That is wonderful. That's the greatest news I have heard in decades. The power of the enemy press is broken. And now, not even their worst lies or their years of falsehoods amount to anything. The only thing left of them now is silence. And that's exactly what they're doing. This is their last weapon. This is the implosion. We are witnessing the implosion of the big news media. And what's going to happen, and what is happening, is that the rise of you and people like you, because the American people want to hear what you have to say and what your guests have to say, and they don't give a damn about the news media anymore. I think that's just wonderful. And we're witnessing the rise of independent people who can think for themselves, who can have the courage, the death-defying courage, to tell the truth, whereas all of the slick journalists on TV, nobody's watching them anymore. They're in the toilet. Their ratings are in the toilet, and they're going down. So that's all they have now. They're even they're in such a bad condition, they're even beyond lying their way out of it, which they have always done in the past. No, it doesn't work because nobody believes them anymore.
That's
so
true.
All
Good
they
point.
Have is silence. That's it. And they're being silent about possibly the greatest story of all time, which is the end of the world.
Could be.
They're not talking about it.
No. This
I lived through the Cuban Missile Crisis, which we're going to be talking about. This is the week that was, and part of the week that was is something that happened a long time ago. It happened in 1961, and that was the Cuban Missile Crisis. The Cuban Missile Crisis, not 1961. Yes, that's right. The Cuban Missile, 1962, pardon me. 1962, the Cuban Missile Crisis. I lived through that, as many of our listeners did, and I since got to know some of the people that were involved in it, and I've been able to understand what really happened. But the Cuban Missile Crisis, that's when we were on the knife's edge of an atomic exchange with the Soviet Union. And what saved it was a telephone, because Kennedy and Khrushchev were always negotiating. Even at the height of that crisis, there were lines of negotiation open, and it was through those lines of negotiation that they were both able to step away from pushing that button. Today, the difference is nobody is talking to anybody else.
Not much
Biden is not talking to Putin. Yeah. Putin believes nothing the Americans have to say. There are no negotiations. Both sides have said that there will be no negotiations unless certain preconditions are met. That was not the attitude that was taken in 1962 with the Cuban Missile Crisis, where they did negotiate, and it is to Kennedy's, and to some extent, even Khrushchev's credit that they negotiated themselves away and from this difficult situation, right, and they gave us life. That is not happening today. Nobody's talking. So when men stop talking, that's when they pick up their weapons. And I cannot believe that human beings, adult human beings,
adults,
would have gotten to this point. I've got the chance to know a lot of these people that are involved in this personally over the years. Yeah. And I won't tell you how or why. It's not interesting anyway, but I've known people. I got to know people quite well, like John Kerry. I got to know him quite well. I got to know people like Jesse Ventura, the governor of Minnesota. I got to know him quite well. And there are others like that. And I know how these people think. They don't care about the sufferings of anybody else. They have, it doesn't even enter their consciousness. Mm-hmm. President Trump said in a moment of weakness that if the conditions in the Near East continue on as they are now, and I'm paraphrasing, but you can go back and find this. You maybe remember. He said, we will obliterate Iran. We will thermonuclear vaporize 9 million people just in passing. If you do not stop this, we're not going to take this aggression against Israel any longer. And if this continues, we have the capacity and we will do to mention such a thing. Do you think the Iranian people, the average Iranian, is involved in anything, has anything to say about it? And yet here he's glibly saying that I will vaporize 9 million human beings because their government isn't in line with the way I think it should be. That is the typical mentality. I'm not going after Trump for this. I'm saying that he is no different than any of these other psychopaths, and that's what these people are. They are, at the root of their thinking is an incredible self-weakness, self-denial, and self-doubt, and they have to overcompensate by absorbing as much power as possible. It's impossible for someone like you or myself or any normal human being to understand that kind of a mentality, but these are the people that run the world. Whether they're Russian or Americans or British makes no difference whatsoever. These are the people that run the world. And their policy is regarded as kind of God sent. And if it's not, then they have no qualms whatsoever about obliterating and incinerating millions of people because they know that their news media can always spin it any way they want. And this is the incredible tragedy of the time in which we live. I mean, everything that I was prepared to talk about tonight is unimportant. It's redundant compared to what this is. And yet, it's not being discussed in the media. Well, Americans don't know.
No, they don't.
It's interesting that you brought this up. I'm glad you did because, as I say, this was the year in 1962 that the Cuban Missile Crisis took place. And the reason why the Cuban Missile Crisis took place was not Kennedy's fault. It was the fault of the previous administration, the Eisenhower administration. Mm-hmm. In 1958,
Kennedy inherited a lot of negative things he had to deal with, and people don't remember that, but that's true.
No.
Very true.
He became president in 1961, January 1961. 3 years before that, the United States, under the Eisenhower administration, installed medium-range missiles capable of atomic warheads, the same as today, not as effective as the ones today, but nonetheless batteries of American missiles right
Jupiter
on the
missiles.
Turkish border pointed at the Soviet Union.
Yep, Jupiter
what
missiles.
What would you think if you're, bring this down to the level of a neighborhood, what if your neighbor across the right at the fence is pointing a .357 Magnum at your bedroom window? But it's amazing. When that happened in 1958, the Soviets, they just objected to it. And they just said, this is unacceptable. and it has to be stopped. What did the Americans do in 1959? They doubled the number of missiles at the Turkish border. We're
That's
going to
nice.
Show them.
Yeah.
Under Eisenhower.
Yeah.
So when Kennedy came in, he was notified by Khrushchev. He says, this situation is intolerable. It has to be done politically. I have to do something, because otherwise the Russian people they're going to hang me, because I'm such a weakling. If I don't do something other than just trying to negotiate, I can't keep telling them we're going to the United Nations all the time. That's not very impressive. I've got to do something, so you've got to get rid of these. So Kennedy said, okay, I will talk to my military advisors and we'll try to take care of it. This is a part of the negotiations, I think, that saved the world. And so his generals and his chiefs of staff said, no, if anything, this is a sign that they're beginning to break, that they're weak. So we should, if anything, you should tell him that we're putting in the newest versions now. I forgot what the version of it was then, Tomahawk or something like that. They always come up with these romantic names for
That's
these genocidal yeah. weapons that they yeah. use. And Kennedy said, well, hold on, I'll get back to that. And he told Khrushchev, he says, my advisors tell me that we have to reinforce this position and take it down. So Khrushchev virtually hung up on him. And that was the Cuban Missile Crisis at that, because he told them, okay, if you can point weapons right across the border at us, we can do the same thing, too. There's a place called Cuba. And so the Russians started that. And that's the rest, you know, is history. The reason why the Cuban Missile Crisis ended was because Kennedy said, okay, I will personally remove those missiles. I will remove each one of them from Turkey. They will no longer be active. On right. the condition that you get out of Cuba. Khrushchev said immediately, done deal. It's fine. And that was the end of the Cuban Missile Crisis. Nothing like that is transpiring today. If we had a real leader in the White House, and actually Trump, for all of his negative qualities, we have to understand where Trump is coming from. The biggest influences in Trump's life were his father, who was a terrific, very powerful real estate mogul in New York City, and that's power. That's powerful.
Oh, yeah. You bet.
He wanted to show his dad, in a good sense, that he was just as good, or he was trying to follow in his footsteps. And in order to do that, to become a powerful real estate mogul in New York City then, and I'm sure now, you had to deal with two powerful forces. One of them was the mafia, because the mafia controlled, had a lock-in control over construction and workers. And if you didn't do what they said, you were going to have more trouble than you bargained for. And the other power was the U.S. government, which was trying to get the mafia, trying to wipe them up. And so Trump became very skilled in walking the fine line between gangsters. And I mean, we're talking about really big-time gangsters, billionaire gangsters, mm-hmm. both in and out of the U.S. government. And he became a very successful real estate mogul, just like his dad, because he knew how to work both sides. That was good experience, because you're dealing with two criminal phenomena, governments in Moscow and government in Washington, D.C. They're both criminal syndicates. And someone like Trump, I don't know that he will do this, someone like Trump could go to Putin and say, hey, look, I want you to get out of Ukraine right now. I want you, all this to stop. Everything's going to stop. And you can keep what you have, because you know there are Russian populations there. And I understand what Ukraine has become, a corrupt, degenerate front for NATO. That's and billionaires trying to wash their laundry,
oh, yeah.
Their money
it's
laundry
disgusting.
Out. I know,
wow.
I understand all that, he could tell Vladimir. Yeah. And he says, we will get out. I will stop that war. There will be no more NATO messing about. And you can pretty much do what you want in Ukraine. But I've got to make a deal with you. You've got to get out of Iran. You have tens of thousands of your people in Iran. We know that. And they all got to get out. I'm going to pull every American, I'm going to pull every European out of the Ukraine. You can do whatever we want. You want. We don't care. But in order for us to do that, we'll end this war immediately. And on your terms, you've got to get out of Iran and let me do everything I can to build up Israel, because that's what he wants. He's a Zionist. He is a thoroughly dyed-in-the-wool Zionist.
Hard-carrying, Lubavitcher, praying at Schneerson's tomb with Shapiro, a month ago now. Some crazy stuff.
It is. No. You know, the very first thing that Trump did when he found out that he had won the election, he dropped everything. Who did he notify? Did he congratulate his campaign workers? No. Did he even talk to his supporters about it? No. What he did is he made a personal phone call to a lady by the name of Mermelstein, who had donated $100 million to this man's presidency, his candidacy. That was the first thing he did. He called her and says, Ethel, we've won. Oh, that's very good, Donald. I see the money was well invested. And the second phone call he didn't make came in from Tel Aviv. And who was on the line but Bibi and Netanyahu?
Yeah, he's talked to him three times, admittedly, already. It's probably more like five or six, but we know about three already.
This is not secret, as you know. This is, was all talked about, but it's forgotten. And just according to the regimen laid down by Charles Foster Kane, if you put it on a small page or bury it inside or on the back page, it's not important, you know. But it is important, of course. So that's what a real president, and a president really like Trump, could do. End the war in Ukraine immediately. No more deaths. There are at least a million people dead, and that is an ultra-conservative estimate.
Yes, sir.
We don't know.
Yes, sir. Exactly.
It's at least, if you take into the not only the military personnel, but the civilians, it's easily a million, maybe twice as much. We don't know. But a minimum of a million dead Europeans. And that can be ended, just as Trump said. He can keep that promise. Whether he will do that or not, I don't know. But the deal would be the Russians must get out of Iran, pull everything out, have nothing to do with them, don't give them any more airplanes, don't give them more modern electronics, none of that stuff. They're on their own. And give you, in other words, I will trade Ukraine for Iran. And then I can do everything to give a total percent to Israel, and so totally intimidate all of the other Arab nations there that everything would be just the way I want it. That's a possibility that could happen. I'm not saying that it will, but that seems to me something that would fit in with his character. The other person that I didn't mention that he was influenced by, he's only two men have influenced his life, his dad quite a bit, which I think who was a good guy, from everything I understand. Uh-huh. He was generally a good man.
Right.
And the other guy was not a good man. He was a very evil man. That was Roy Cohn. And Roy Cohn was the personal saboteur of Senator McCarthy, and beginning there.
He was a
dyed-in-wool gangster.
He was one of Satan's own. You're right. Cohn was a bad man.
He was truly satanic man.
Yeah.
And he was a powerful, very powerful man, very influential figure for decades. And he sort of became kind of a mentor for Trump. He was a very Machiavellian figure in which power was everything. That's the only thing. And once you get into this game, you better not try to get out, because you'll be overpowered and destroyed. Uh-huh. So you're in your quest for power, you will soon realize that you're in a struggle for your own survival. And the only way to survive is to become ever more powerful. These are the things that he told Trump as his mentor. So naturally, anybody's head is going to be twisted around with things like that.
Well, I think it was Lavrov who said President-elect Trump can speak to Vladimir Putin, and I think he said anytime he wants. That was, he's got our number. You know, call us. It's not happening, apparently. So that's all I can tell you.
He hasn't become president yet. So
no,
in
understood.
A way, yeah.
I understood. I don't. I still think he could. I think if I were in that position, I would make a hell of a lot of noise about this right
Absolutely.
Now. Even though I have no license to do so to speak, I would really be banging the walls about this. Here's Putin again we will use nuclear weapons if a mass enemy missile is launched toward Russia or when these weapons cross into Russian territory. So right now, that's a quote, right now, they could nuke us. They could nuke Europe, Brussels, Paris, London, I don't care. They could nuke anybody they want. They have stated their position. That position has been violated once again, and the ball's in their court now. That's the way I see it.
And even if not a single one of their missiles strike Europe or the United States, and God prevent that ever happened, but even if none of that happened,
right,
and the Russians were to take the full brunt of a nuclear war, the scope of that tragedy of many millions of our people incinerated, burned alive, what kind of a victory would that be? They think, referring to the so-called liberals or neocons, whatever you want to call them, that Putin is all the problem here. He isn't. He is in a position that is unenviable because he is right at this moment under terrific political pressure, not only from in his own government, but from
his
the
people.
Masses of the Russian people. He must do something. You cannot insult an entire people continuously the way the American government
has done. Over and over again. No, it's drawn. We've crossed it.
We've
we deserve
crossed it
whatever
times.
We get. Sorry, that's the truth. That's geopolitical reality.
Numerous times.
Yes.
And unless... the problem with it, Jeff, I don't see any way out of this.
It's cartwheeling. It's cartwheeling. It's out of control. It's not going to... No. Even when Trump takes over, I wouldn't hold my breath for that, to be honest with you.
No.
Because look at his commitment to the Zionist state of Israel. Whatever you want, as much as you want, the money and the weapons are going to continue to flow. We don't give a damn about Palestinian lives, men, women, and children. We don't care about Lebanese civilians. We don't care about Syrians. We're going to give you Israelis whatever you want.
Whatever
and
you want.
That
carte
is
blanche.
Despicable.
Carte blanche.
This is the Zionist occupied government of America. Now and after January 20th. Even more so after January 20th. That's me speaking.
I would
speaking,
say probably even more so. Even more
yeah,
so.
Yeah, that's why I said that. I agree. Look at
the only good that can come out of it is if the situation in the Ukraine is stabilized. That's not the way to do it by
you know, here's another thing, Frank. Let
another.
Me get your take on this. When the Donbass held elections and voted to become part, it was like 90% voted to become part of Russia. They were sick and tired of the 2014 U.S.-installed Zionist government, which is anti-Christian and anti-Ukraine, quite frankly. They were into looting, anyhow, and killing the people in Donbass. They voted to join Russia. Look at a map of Donbass. I've said this before, when that vote was taken, what Donbass, as part of Russia, actually looked like. Look at it now. After 1,000 days, today, of war between Ukraine and the U.S. and Russia, and NATO and Russia, look at that Donbass area now. It's almost the same. The Russians haven't made any monumental gains. It's almost the same. Look at the map. The maps don't lie. And there are many Ukrainian military forces now still in parts of Donbass. They haven't been evicted yet. This is on the election. On the basis of what the people voted for, there are still Ukrainian military in Donbass right now.
Yes, I know. Well, my take on that is that this has never been a war about real estate. We're not talking about World War II. I'm talking about things that happened 80 years ago. This is a new century. This is the 21st century. Has nothing to do... Matter of fact, the more real estate, if you want to put it that way, the more territory that Russia absorbs, the more problems they will have. Do you think they want more and more difficulties with different peoples with different agendas striving continuously and they have to be solved? No, they're not interested in that in the least. All they want, all they have ever wanted, is just to be able to have those areas that have predominantly Russian populations to belong to Russia, which is what any nation in the world would want. That's not what NATO wants. And behind the people that are with NATO, they want to have Russia destroyed. If Russia cannot be destroyed, they want it subsumed into their one-world system that they have. That's actually what they would prefer. They would prefer that Putin fall on his knees and surrender and say, do anything you want to us, just don't drop any bombs on us anymore, and then we will just turn over our country completely to the kind of wonderful morality that we have in this country and in England now. That's all there. They want actually Russia to be another Ukraine, a quasi-money laundering, corrupt, degenerate puppet. That's what they want Russia for. And if they can't have that, then we're going to incinerate them all. That's the mentality. That actually is the mentality of the people that are at work in our country and in the West today. The country is not run by people who are intelligent. The country is being run by people that belong in an insane asylum. Yeah, to have even considered anything like promising the Ukrainians that they can launch these missiles. Actually, that's just as, like you've said, the Ukrainians are ill-trained. They're ill-equipped.
No,
they don't know how to even work these weapons.
These are all American-supplied, American-launched, American-targeted. Everybody knows it. The Russians know it. And to underestimate Russia in any way is really stupid. Really stupid.
Incredible.
They have weapons.
But they don't
Frank,
care.
They have weapons now. They have weapons now, the Russians. And Putin has alluded to them that no one has and no one has talked about and that will wipe out all life but won't mess up the real estate. I don't know what these weapons are. They're not nukes. They're not necessarily EMPs. There's something else that they're saying that they have.
Well, they've had the neutron bomb around for a long time.
Remember the neutron bomb?
That
came from the late 50s, early 60s.
That's what I mean.
The ability to build that
neutron
weapon.
Specifically, it has to be that. Kill people and to allow the real estate to be untouched.
It has to be a neutron. That's all I can guess. I agree. Something like a neutron weapon.
Like the neutron bomb. Yeah. But, I mean, it's interesting. I brought up that great work of art, Citizen Kane, and there's a great work of art even earlier than that, and that was Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, which is the personification of technology gone wrong. That's exactly what that story is about. You know, when you see these old films and these old stories like Dracula and Frankenstein, why are they still so popular? That's because they have entered the subconscious imagination of many millions of people. It's not just about some clunky-looking monster, Boris Karloff, or blood-sucking vampire like Bela Lugosi. No. These films, these great works of art, and again, like Citizen Kane, they touch something inside of us, deep inside us, that we know is true, that there are vampires in the world, blood-suckers. That really do exist, not in the literal way that we see on the screen, but nonetheless, there are the bloodsuckers.
Oh, yeah. You got it.
And it's the same thing. We do have also the technological monstrosities, a monster. Our technology has allowed to become a monster, a destructive monster. And that's the same, I think, intellectual and instinctual grasp that people are having on. And that has that led to the total rejection, the complete, thorough rejection of the American news media. The American news media cannot survive that kind of rejection. The vast majority of the American people know that they are liars and vampires. And that's what's going to lead to their destruction. So I say that's good. That's wonderful news. That's the only really good news in all this. And it certainly means, you know, it proves you right after all these years. People are listening to you and to people like you, but they're not listening to the faces that are put on the screen anymore. That's gone. That's over with. But at the price
of
what?
Well, I hope so. The idea of staring and responding and reacting is antithetical to intellectual growth and use of what God gave you. We have a brain. We're supposed to think about things and formulate things and create ideas and react properly, not just blindly.
That's what social media is able to do now. The other difficulty, and that's the thing that I find rather frightening, is that, okay, you have all these highly developed systems, and the Americans are boasting, oh, we can shoot down all these incoming missiles if they actually happen.
Right.
You go on some of the Good military luck. Sites, which are accessible to the American people, but they're kind of long and boring mostly, but if you dig deeply into them, well, the basic gist of it is, yes, in a nuclear exchange, you can ask, for example, go on the site that I most like is the U.S. Navy site, because that one's easier to navigate through, and you can ask questions. The Air Force is a little bit more private on that, it seems. But if you go on the U.S. Navy website, you can ask questions like, well, what are the chances of America winning a nuclear exchange against Russia? And they will come up with the answer and says, well, we believe that we have the capacity to shoot down and to destroy the vast majority of incoming nuclear weapons. Then you ask further, like, well, how many weapons will get through? And they said, well, probably no more than a maximum of about 25 and a minimum of about 16. Really? Mm-hmm. 16 nuclear explosions across the United States? Really? That's kind of impressive. And the reason why they say that'll happen is because the Soviets and the Americans have just about the same amount of nuclear weapons pointed at each other, about 6,000 or a little more, 6,400, something like that.
6,000 total or 6,000 each?
Each. We're talking about reserves. Absolutely
Understood.
Everything down to the last one. So they have about 6,000 apiece pointed at each other. And if they fire them all at once, they will overwhelm the system. There is no system on Earth that is capable
of
shooting down 6,000 incoming weapons. Impossible.
No, of course not. Oh, no. Now let's go back to the idea of a neutron bomb. Understand that a neutron weapon would leave New York intact, basically. There'd be some superficial damage here and there.
Yeah.
But everybody in the city would be dead meat. They just die. It disassembles life. Neutron weaponry. Look it up. Neutron bomb. That would be an intelligent... Think about it. That would be an intelligent way to fight wars. Not with radioactivity being produced by thousands of warheads going off, but neutron weapons, which leave the real estate alone and just get rid of the people. Now, that's pretty cruel, but still, it's a better way to fight a war than turning the entire Northern Hemisphere into a radioactive cauldron, which kills all life eventually. I wouldn't want to see that. No, I don't want to see any war, but go ahead.
Well, that's a great point that you bring up, and I asked that of the U.S. Navy point blank about that. Well, why is it that we don't all have neutron bombs now instead of these destructive radioactive things? And the answer came back immediately. Neutron bombs are far more expensive.
That's funny. All right.
Yeah, isn't that... You know, when I was a child...
What does it cost to rebuild a nation that has been leveled by radioactive, highly destructive, 50-megaton warheads? What does it cost to rebuild a nation? And talk about the expense of a neutron warhead.
That's well, they're thinking just in departmental terms. Oh, we can't afford that.
I know.
And then we'd have to go to Congress. And you know, when I was a child growing up, I was a dumb kid, and I knew all kids were kind of dumb. And I thought, well, adults are all smart, and whatever they say and do is the correct thing. Of course, I only had teachers and nuns and priests and my parents and so forth, and they all acted very responsibly towards me, and they knew what was good for me. And so I came to respect my elders. That's the way I was raised. And I found out that is all a lie, that adults today represent the most stupid, self-destructive species on the entire earth, that mankind can be viewed, I don't care for all of his Shakespeare and his Beethoven and everything, but as an aggregate, can you imagine any other species that would have, because of the advancement in technology, a terrific, it's miraculous inventions and progress in technology, would use that to end life on earth?
The level of stupidity is
beyond monumental.
Right. First step is to become incompetent. That's what technology has been used for, unfortunately, on the masses. Secondly, when you have a brilliant technology like the cell phone, and it is so absolutely magnificent at brain and mind manipulation. You've got nothing to worry about. The average person is 4.5 hours a day on that cell phone, and the younger that average age goes, the higher that daily amount goes. It'll go up to 5-6 hours a day. Of doing what? Nothing. Staring, nothing. Looking for likes, hoping for an endorphin rush with a bunch of likes for some post. Everybody's live streaming now. It's a joke. Let me tell you one other thing. We kill about 45,000 human beings on the highways and byways and streets of this country every year. 45,000 a year. It's never talked about.
Right.
It's not talked about. Now add to that the fact that at any moment, like right now, there are, on average, 660,000 people at the wheel driving while they're on their cell phones. Right now, around the clock, 660,000 on their phones while driving. And how much of their attention is taken away from the rules of the road, safety, common sense? What, 3/4 of it? They're focused on their damn phones. It's terminal addiction.
Yeah, and there are, these are the voters, you know.
Yes, right. Well, they're not really elections anyway, so.
No, of course not.
It's a social exercise to placate the people and pacify them.
Well, the world enemy laughs. You know, they see all of these cattle, these sheep, you know, that think they've got to, oh, I'm voting, you know. I've even seen bumper stickers that says, beware, I vote. Oh, look out.
That's pretty funny.
So
that screen is dominant, I'm telling you. That is the dominant medium of the Matrix. That is the control vector, those screens. They are withering. You can't stop watching them. How many people have you seen when you drive on their phones, looking down at their phones for, just a second, just a split second, I'll look down.
That's all it takes.
Gone.
But, you know, in the long stretch of history, sometimes you still find good things. There was a civilization very much like ours. It's been compared to American civilization numerous times. That's Rome. And in the end of the 3rd century A.D., Rome looked like it was on the way out. It had way too many problems internally and externally. Some of those problems are exactly the same as our own. Not just the discontent, but also large amounts of immigrants who were being made into citizens, free citizens, if they just would pay a sesterce, which is just the equivalent of a dollar, that sort of thing. And it led to terrific chaos. And a man came to power. His name was Diocletian. He's not one of the more famous emperors. He should be, because he saved Rome. Historians now understand that Diocletian probably saved Roman civilization for at least another 150 years. That's quite an accomplishment for one man. And Diocletian didn't do that by becoming a dictator. Far from it. He pretty much dissolved the idea of Caesar. He appointed 4 men to run the Roman Empire. He was the single most important of them, but he was really not the autocrat that the others had been. And he slowly rebuilt Rome, and he saved Rome. Well, that's what we need, I suppose, and maybe people are thinking that their Diocletian is Donald Trump. I don't think so. But nonetheless, societies do occasionally bounce back. It does happen. That was November 20th, 284 A.D., when Diocletian, so we're coming out with the anniversary, tomorrow's the anniversary of Diocletian's rise to becoming Roman emperor, and he saved Rome. He pacified the borders through reason and strength. He was able to unite the people with all their terrific difficulties and so forth. And there was another anniversary, also on November 20th, 1776, in this country. It's one of the strangest events of the American Revolutionary War, one of the strangest, and also not well known, but should be. George Washington had suffered 2 colossal defeats at the hands of the British Army. One of the defeats was really demoralizing because the Americans were defeated at a place called Fort Washington, where they had made a very vigorous stand, but were nonetheless defeated by the British. And on November 20th, 1776, just before that, the British landed 5,000 elite troops in New Jersey. These men were experienced, hardened veterans. They were well equipped with cannon, which the Americans were not. They had food, which the Americans did not have much of. And they had a brilliant leader, Cornwallis. He became more famous later on, but Cornwallis.
There must have been a huge fleet of ships to bring that many men and materiel over here.
It was.
That's a lot of ships.
It was huge. 5,000 excellent men. By this time, with these two defeats, the American cause was being deserted. Many people had given up on it. This is just in 1776. We just started.
Right.
And so Washington picked up the remnants of his army, which was less than half the size of the British coming in. And he found a place called Bergen County and a place called Fort Lee, New Jersey. And it was an excellent place to be. It was very safe. It was guarded by a geologic formation known as the Palisades. It's still there today. And these sheer cliffs, that would keep anybody out. It was like a natural castle. And so he was recovering his forces there. When all of a sudden, and this is fact, history, somebody known as the Cloister Rider. Cloister was the name of the town, or rather the political area named Bergen County, New Jersey. And this guy, nobody knew who he was. He was a middle-aged man, and he rode up to the forces, came out of nowhere, and he said, the British are on the other side of the Palisades. They have a huge force coming for you, and they're going to take you, and that'll be the end of your revolution. They're going to capture you, and they're going to execute a lot of you and bring you back to London. You're going to go to Tyburn Gallows, and they're going to hang you there. You must leave immediately. So they said, well, what are your credentials? He said, I'm just a man from Cloister. And he rode off. He didn't present any credentials. So they thought, this guy's crazy. Nobody's going to be able to make it over those palisade walls. They're hundreds of feet high, sheer cliff. And they told Washington about it. And all of his officers said, this guy is probably sent by the British. We don't know who he was. He didn't have any papers. We don't believe him at all. Nobody's going to make it over those palisades. And Washington said, you're probably right. But we're getting out of here. I got a bad feeling about this.
Uh-huh.
So Washington picked up everybody and they left.
About 60 seconds, Frank. Go ahead.
They left, and as soon as they got out of Bergen County, here come the British 5,000 forces, and they missed Washington by a hair's breadth. If he had been captured at that time, that would have been it. We would have had no independent United States. We were on the skids then. And he got us out because of the what is known as the Cloister Rider, this mysterious guy that gave the warning and got out. So maybe we'll have something equivalent to that happen that will pull our civilization out of its nosedive, too.
Well, I still do believe that Trump has already, unfortunately, demonstrated that he's not his own man. His appointments speak volumes. And
they're
he
all
could
neocons.
Have, he absolutely. This is Zog. He could have, in 2016, gone down as one of the great American presidents. He could have this time. He's not going to. He's in the middle of the bureaucracy and the military-industrial complex. He is beholden to Miriam Adelson and so many others who have put money into his machine.
Yep.
He is not his own man. He's a great entertainer. People like him. He makes them feel good. At least half of America, the other half, they're communists, socialists, liberals, leftists. But the Trump half, they like him. I would suggest on the Trump half, maybe 75% of those people don't approve of his appointments. He just named Howard Lutnick today, Department of Commerce chair, I think. Yeah. Anyway, it's just one Zionist after another. Whether they're Jewish or Christian Zionists, it doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't.
Okay,
no.
Wrap her up, my friend. We got to go.
Okay, well, thank you so much, and I think it was a good conversation, as we always have, and I hope our listeners found it of some worthwhile.
Oh, I'm sure they did. You're always have a great response when you're on. Thank you, Frank. You take care.
Thank you so much. I deeply appreciate it. I'll talk to you next month.
Okay. You betcha. Good night. Frank Joseph, and we'll be right back with David Oates next.